Here's a quick way to improve your online business. Add a form or a survey to your website and make it easy for your audience to give you feedback. I've been using WooFoo for years, and I recommend that you use them for your embeddable forms and surveys, not just because they're my sponsor, but because they're so easy to use that your audience will actually fill out your forms and take your surveys. Check out WooFoo.com, use them for free today, have them embedded on your website in minutes. WooFoo.com. This interview is also sponsored by Shopify. Many in my audience have said that they've heard my sponsorship messages about Shopify here on Mixergy, that they checked it out, and it is, just as I've been saying, easy to set up a store with them. You'll have all the features that you need in order to sell and maintain inventory and take credit cards and everything else. You can even customize it. Check out one of their themes and customize it and make it your own. With Shopify.com, you can be up and running with the store today. Within weeks, you'll be selling. Within a month, you'll know how successful your online store can be. So check out Shopify right now. Finally, this interview is sponsored by Grasshopper. It's the virtual phone system that entrepreneurs love. When you set up a phone number with Grasshopper, you can have multiple extensions. If your business doesn't have multiple departments, that's okay. You can still set them up and give the impression of size to anyone who calls you. Let them hear that they can call and reach the sales department, IT department, etc. And of course, as your business grows, each one of those extensions can have a real person and a real department behind it. Check out grasshopper.com today. Here's a program. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. The goal here at Mixergy is to talk to a mix of different entrepreneurs, find out how they built their business, learn as much as we can from them, and more importantly, as great as it is to find out about other people, I think it's more important for us to take the best ideas and use them in our own business, and then email me if you're going to do it and tell me what you've used. I love hearing from the audience about how they've used these ideas. Today I've got with me Paul Singh. He started an online business as a joke, got his first customer within the first day, business has been around for 6 months, has been profitable since the beginning. I'm going to grill him about how much money it's making, I'm going to grill him about why he did this as a joke, and also just learn as much as we can about how the business grew. MailFinch is the name of this business, Paul. What is MailFinch?
So MailFinch is an on-demand direct mail platform. We basically make it super easy for you to send small batches of direct mail.
And this is direct mail, that's the paper-based mail that goes in people's mailboxes, they open it up, the old stuff.
That's it, yeah, it's the old stuff.
Okay.
That incidentally makes people a lot of money. So
I'm going to find out how much money makes you in a moment, but we're gonna hold off on that for now and find out just where this came from. What was the original name for MailFinch?
Yeah, so the original name was called SnailPad, and you know, realistically, there was no real reason I called it SnailPad other than it was an available domain, and I thought, well, the name's really not going to be important. And 5 seconds later, I bought the domain and launched something on that Monday.
You told me in the pre-interview that this was just a one pager. What was on that one page?
Yeah, so it was basically a single page that basically had a little text box at the top where you could like paste your letter in, and then at the bottom you put in your return address, destination address, and then when you press the send button, it actually took you to PayPal, and you had to pay me $3 to send that one letter. Because I, again, as a joke, I kind of thought that maybe people would want to send letters to their grandmother, or they'd want to send, you know, a one-off letter to their mom, but that's not. That didn't turn out to be how people used it.
Okay, and Paul, let's see if our video camera just, oh good, I thought we lost each other. Paul, once somebody paid, was it automated? Did you automatically send? No, nothing like that, right? It was just a single page, goes to PayPal, and that's it.
Yeah, and then it actually would email me a confirmation email, obviously the one from PayPal telling me I got some money, and then a separate email from my system that would say, here's what they want to mail, they want it on this date, do it. And then I would go into Word and, you know, make it look pretty and send it out. And I was using a free printer that I actually got from my sister-in-law when she bought her last laptop. So, I mean, it was so ghetto.
Before the interview started.
It still is ghetto, so.
When the interview started, actually, I said that my goal here is to learn from entrepreneurs like you and pull out your best ideas and give them to my audience so they can use them. And before the interview, you said that one of the biggest takeaways that you have from this is that minimum viable product, lean startup idea, that it really does work. And this really is the minimum viable product. It's just an HTML page that links over to PayPal. PayPal gave you the button. You didn't need to do anything beyond that.
That's exactly what it was, actually.
How did anyone discover it? There are people out in the audience right now. They have web pages that people that they've been blogging on and people still haven't discovered. How did they discover your page?
So when I emailed out the link to a couple friends of mine, again, in hindsight, I know the answer. At the time, I was like, holy shit, how did somebody even find me? But in hindsight, what had happened was that when I emailed it out, somebody that was in somebody else's network decided to try the service. And it just so happened that he turned out to be a real estate agent.
I see. So you just emailed it to your friends. You said, hey, I created this website. If anybody wants to use it, go check it out.
Yeah.
Okay, now I introduced this as a joke because you told me it was a joke of a website.
Yeah.
Was it really a joke, or were you trying to test out an idea that's been rattling in your head?
You know, so it definitely wasn't rattling in my head. What had happened was is that I had just exited my last startup, and I was having dinner with a couple friends in downtown DC, and we were, you know, and I'm probably fudging this, so if any of you guys are listening, I'm sorry, but in general, they were saying, well, Paul, you know, maybe you're going to have to go get a real job now. And I said, oh, God, no, that's not going to happen. I'm going to try to figure out if there's, you know, something I can do that touches the real world. And that's sort of how this kind of all happened. And actually, if you talk to some of those guys from that night at dinner, they'll tell you that, like, that day they didn't really think that I was going to do anything. And then the following Monday when I launched it, they were like, oh, shit. And actually, one of the guys at the table turned out to be an early customer, and he was actually the first one to give me his actual credit card. So that I could cover some of his mailing needs.
Okay, what options did you have with that first version?
With the first version of the product?
Yeah, I mean, I could understand that they could only write one letter, they could only address it to one person, and it could only come from one address, right? So those are the three fields, basically, that you had there.
Yeah.
But did you give them the option to send it first class versus third class? Did you give them the option to send one versus 100? It was only one letter that they could send out this way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just one. It was just one. Within a day or two, once I started kind of seeing what people were mailing, it turned out that it was generally the same thing over and over. So I just experimented and I added a PDF upload area. And that's that actually turned out to be, I think, in hindsight, what kind of helped the users use it even more and give me more feedback about how they were using it. And that's how I really figured out what they were using it for. And it really was just newsletters. It was all the email marketing stuff that your audience probably already knows about. But it turns out that a lot of brick and mortar places or a lot of industries, and you know, specific industries still rely on high touch marketing. That's, you know, once they had that PDF upload, I started to see a lot of patterns in the data. And we're not talking like thousands of data points. It was like, hey, this guy just sent the same PDF to 10 people. I wonder why. And then you look at his domain name. That's actually how before I got on the phone with anybody, the first thing I did was look at their domain name, because I captured their email address on the premise that I said, hey, I'll send you a confirmation when the mail guy picks it up tomorrow. And so when I looked at the domain name, I'm like, oh, this isn't a Gmail account. he's making money off of me. I got to figure out why.
And so actually, before we continue with the story, I got to say that the audience here is loving this idea. I see Dan Blank saying SnailPad, love it. Eddie, yeah, he sounds cool. The guest, a guy in my audience who calls himself the guest, says, pretty cool idea, something most think of, but something a lot of businesses need. I guess not something most people think of, but what a lot of businesses need. Casey Allen loves the name SnailPad and hopes that you use it for another business. Dan Blank, it's so simple, it's genius. Omar, it's always the simple ideas. AppRabbit, I love. What I love about this idea is that it's a type of thing you could ask a small business owner, what are some of your problems? And this might be the answer to one of them. Really, people in the audience are loving this idea. I want to see how it evolved. Okay, so before we get into the PDF, let's understand, were there any steps beyond that? Actually, no, I want to go even simpler. My goal here is to really dissect this so I can understand every piece of it. That first email, the first letter that was sent out, what did he send out?
You know, I'd probably need to go back and look. I want to say it was just some sort of test letter to himself, I think.
Interesting.
Don't hold me to that, but I think it was like a test letter back to himself.
I see. So he wanted to see what it would look like, how it would work.
Yeah, yeah. And that actually, in hindsight, that told me a lot about how some of these high-touch marketers, you know, got into this business. They don't necessarily just trust something right out of the gate. They needed to see what they were going to get. So samples became a big part of what I do.
Do you give out free samples now?
Yeah. There's actually a free, there's actually like a trial account now that I call. And when you sign up, it allows you to send one letter to yourself.
I see. Because you saw that people were doing that to themselves, you said, let's give them that so that they can understand that this really works.
Yeah. I wish I had done it sooner, actually. I probably waited, I want to say, about 60 days before I did that. Honestly, in hindsight, I was really scared that people were going to abuse the system and just start sending, you know, like using multiple accounts. In hindsight, you know, and I hope your audience doesn't take advantage of this, nobody's done that yet. And every once in a while, I do get a guy that'll just sign up and send like a notice to a credit agency or some one-off letter. And that's okay. I mean, it amounts to such a small amount of my current volume that I'm happy to do it. And if they want to come back and use me again, they'll pay for it next time.
What did you charge for that first letter?
$3. In fact, today it's still $3 for one letter.
If you want to send one letter, it's $3. Did you email him afterwards and ask him anything about why he used the system or how he found you?
Not until I saw somebody use it multiple times. And by multiple, it was like at least twice. And in the early days, we're only talking about like 3 or 4 guys.
Okay, so these people were using it. Some of them used it multiple times. You decided to email them. And how did you ask them about what they were doing with the system? What did you ask?
Actually, I just sent an email saying, I could probably send you the template if you want. But basically, I think the first line was like, I hope you'll give me 30 seconds of your time. I'm the founder of a service called Mailfinch that you recently used to send a letter to so-and-so. And I used that name that it kind of kept them, I thought it would keep them from just deleting the email right away. And then I just basically said, look, you know, this started out as an idea. I just really want to learn more about how you use it. Could I jump on a quick 20-minute call to talk to you? And I can't remember where I heard this or where I read this, but it was definitely not my idea. I used one phrase at the bottom that I believe fundamentally made these people want to talk to me. Is I just said, I promise I'm not trying to sell anything. I just want your advice or your expert advice. And I'll tell you, like, without that line, I don't think people would have replied. So
that's pretty cool. Okay. So what did you learn in those conversations?
Yeah. So I learned that these people were really hurting. I remember one lady I was talking to, she worked out of a Century 21 office. She was an office manager there. And basically once a month they would get, you know, they have a pecking order of like their top real estate agents, you know, and depended on how much volume you had. But basically at the end of every month, the guy, like the bottom 3 or 4 guys, the ones with the worst sales, would actually have to spend a Saturday in the office printing, folding, stuffing, addressing, and licking envelopes. And they had to do this 800 times, right? And that's like 12 hours worth of work. And like, that's lost time in the field. That was, you know, it was just really painful. And I just said to her, well, like, look, you know, what if you could just upload a list and be done with it? And it was like a no-brainer for her. And that's kind of like where the light bulb started to turn on. You know, it's easy for me to say this in hindsight, but at the time, that was kind of where my light bulb started to turn on. And I'm like, wait, these guys are just sending newsletters. Like, they have somebody in there that just writes a newsletter, and then they have people fold it. And it was like, this is not rocket science, guys, but this is how they make money.
So. Wow. Okay. So what was the first improvement that you made to the site? After you had that basic site, what did you add to it?
So one of the first things was that you could log in and have your own, like, you could have a return address, like a single. It turned out that when repeat users came back, they would always use the same reply address or return address. Well, okay, I did that. I just created a login area. You could log in now, and you could just, in your default settings, create a return profile address or whatever. And that was it. And it just kind of kept
it. Why didn't you, after those phone calls, I would think the first thing you'd add is the ability to add a list of contacts.
Yeah, I wish I was that smart. Because actually the reason I did the return envelope thing, it was one of the early users was actually having his admin send these letters. And so she emails the support thing, which was just me. And she's like, hey, I'm so-and-so and I have to do this all the time. And it really sucks that I have to copy and paste the same address every time. And I was like, well, that's not rocket science. I can fix that. And so I did that really quick. And it was just to solve her pain point. And in hindsight, like, she was actually, it turned out, a virtual administrator. So she had multiple clients. And by making her happy, she was able to bring me a few more of those guys.
I see. She was one of these virtual assistants that you get in a foreign country that work for multiple customers. I see.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she was actually, I think she's in Kansas or Missouri or something like that. But I didn't know this at the time because it looked like she was an employee for that company. You know, I couldn't, she had their domain name and all that on her email address. But in hindsight, when I realized after I sent her, she's like, I was like, hey, I built this for you. I hope things are a little bit easier. Tell me what else sucks. And she replied back and she's like, this is awesome. You know, I'm a virtual admin. Da, da, da. I'm going to tell all my friends about it. And I was like, oh shit, this is awesome.
All right. Another basic question, but I always ask the basic questions, like the tactical basics I get into. Yeah. How did they find your contact information? How were they even able to contact you, these people?
Oh, I just used, that, what's that feedback button on the right side? I'm forgetting their name now.
It's either User Voice, who I use, or
User
it's
Voice.
Get. It is, okay.
That's what I'm using. I'm using
User
Voice.
Just put a User Voice button on the side of your site.
That's what I did, yeah. And then I started experimenting with live chat, and that, actually, I will tell you right now, the live chat I wish I had done sooner. But I was too, my, one of my goals early on was that I was not going to invest any money in this, like, other than my time. I just wanted this thing to be profitable. And so the way I gamed the system, and for you people that run those live chat services, I'm sorry, but what I did was I would, there were two main ones that I liked, and I would just sign up for fake accounts because they all had 30-day trials and switch it up every few weeks, or two-week trials, and I would switch it up. And anyway, that was awesome because that helped me talk to people in real time. And in hindsight, it turns out that if you can solve somebody's problems in real time so that they never leave the site, they're more likely to make an order right there and then. And that's something that you could have told me, but I wouldn't have understood until I actually saw it myself.
I see in the audience is pointing out that the other feedback button that people use is Get Satisfaction. Yeah. What are the two live chat programs that you used?
I use Olark, which is a Y Combinator company, and they've been really good in terms of support and all that. And it's just olark.com. Mm-hmm. And the other one was, I can look this up, but it's basically an orange logo that I remember. It's,
Tell you what, tell me afterwards and we'll include it
yes.
In the program.
Yes.
Moses wants to know how to spell Olark.
OLARK.com.
All right, cool. All right, and so you're using both of these and you settled on Olark.
Yeah.
And what happens is only when you're online, when people are on your website, they'll see this little box that says, do you want to chat? And if they have an issue, they chat with you.
Well, actually, yeah, so that's generally how it works. But like, for example, right now I'm offline. The box is still there and users can click on it and still submit a request and I'll get it via email.
I see. So they get the box, but they're not told that you're there live.
Yeah, it actually tells them whether I'm there or not. So
okay. How does it work when you're not there? How effective is it, I mean?
Well, that's really hard to say. I mean, I do know that, like, very few people have actually sent an email in. So I try to be online. Like, whenever I'm at my laptop, I'm online. In fact, this interview is probably the one time where I'm online but not. So you're costing me money.
Good. It's worth it. I'm costing you money, but I'm getting you a lot of admirers here in the audience. Let's see. Todd W. in the audience is asking if the other live program was Live Person.
No. Okay. Live Person is they're great. They're a great company, but they weren't as easy to integrate, I don't think. And I guess I had an affection for smaller companies, and so I just went for the small guys. I mean.
Okay. All right. And Y Combinator is a supporter of Mixergy, so I'm especially happy to hear that you work
awesome.
With one of their companies. Okay. Olark, what did you learn from having them and this other company? What did you learn from having them on your website?
Well, you know, I learned that if I really had to boil it down into one statement, it's that if I could solve somebody, you know, if somebody's on my website and has an issue and I can answer it right there and then, and they never leave my site, they're more likely to buy something right there and then. And that was, you know, fundamentally, it was a dollars, you know, it was a revenue, like, it was revenue driving. And it was just really fascinating to me that, you know, if you could answer their question right there and then, they would never leave the site. And if they were going to put it in order, they were going to do it right there and then.
But were you discovering features that you never thought of? Were you discovering needs that you weren't aware of because you were answering questions in real time? Did it impact your ad copy?
You know, I don't think Olar, I don't think any live chat helped me do that. I think it was really calling the customers. And, you know, one of the things I was really adamant about was early on, especially, I called at least two people a day. And, you know, especially early on, a lot of those were cold calls. So, and I can tell you about my tactics for getting those cold calls done. But early on, a lot of the success was not through like AdWords or like word of mouth or anything like that. It was just good old fashioned, like, hey, please don't hang up on me. You know, do you mail stuff? Or, hey, don't, please don't hang up on me. I saw that you sent a flyer to my house. Or, hey, don't hang up on me. I see you have an ad in the local paper.
Interesting. So you would say, who's out there using a service that, who's out there doing something that they could be doing on my site? Call them up cold call, find out what they're doing, how they're using it, and see what, how do you make the transition to information you could use for your site?
So here are my assumptions, right? Is that I basically, and today was actually recycling day, so I don't have any with me, but basically I called a lot of my friends. So I live in the Washington, D.C. area, and I called a lot of my friends, at least here around me, and I said, look, send me your local newspapers. I don't want Washington Post or something big. Just send me your local newspapers. And then what I did was I just flipped through them, and my wife will tell you, because like she helped me a lot, and she still does a lot. Thanks, babe. She would open them up with me, and we would basically circle all the ads that were half page or larger. And our assumptions, our core assumptions were that these are people with money. These were people that already bought into the idea of print marketing. And hell, all these ads had their fucking phone number on them. And so I would just call and I'd say, hey, I saw you in the paper. And that was, for example, I realize if you just say, I saw you in the paper, and you then said, hey, I'm running this thing, they would realize you're selling something and hang up. So early on, I started off by saying, hey, I saw you in the paper. Don't hang up. I'm running this startup in the area here. You know a lot about this stuff that I don't know, and I just really wish you'd give me like 20 minutes of your time. I promise I'm not selling anything. And that was really the line in general. And some people hung up on me. Other people like wasted my time for like 20 minutes and then hung up on me. But the rest of them, and I'd say it was over half, would actually like take pity on me and say, they would explain to me how they currently did stuff. And what I found was that they did send flyers and they did send newsletters. And most importantly, they tied revenue to that. They knew, like, it's high touch. In the industry, I learned that was the word, high touch. And so once I learned that, it was kind of like, okay, well, let me see the patterns across two or three calls. And it turned out they all sent newsletters and they all had to print, fold, and stuff. Well, hey, I could do that. And you know, these people were like, the core question I would ask them was, like, once they told me their problem, I'd say, like, well, so how much time do you think that takes you? And that was really important, is that when they would say, oh, you know, well, each one I do takes like 5 minutes, you know, or each one takes 3 minutes, in my head, I'm thinking, because, you know, I just, that's how I think. In my head, I was like, well, if I cut that down to like 10 seconds for the whole thing, they would pay me for that. Because it would add up. It turns out that these people mail a lot of stuff. So,
all right. So that just tells you that there's a market there. What are you learning about how to improve your product through these phone calls?
So one of the things was, again, in hindsight, I wish I had learned this sooner, or at least seen the light a little bit sooner. But about 2 months after I started, I realized that these people were sending, their newsletters to the same list every month. And I know you can laugh at me because that's not rocket science, but I just didn't get it. And then I realized, like, hey, I wonder if I just made it easy for them to, I don't know, have all their contacts in one place. And, so I built this thing and I'm like, huh. And so I started seeing people like put stuff in. And then I was like, well, oh, and then I started showing it to users and I started watching and they would, you know, type in all the addresses and put all their contacts in, and that's how they did it. And I called one of the users back that day and I was like, hey, dude, what do you think? And, you know, this was an old guy. And he's like, I have all my stuff in Excel. How do I get it in there? And I was like, well, that's not rocket science. So I like put this like CSV import thing in there, and it was so ghetto. It's still ghetto today. But literally within that first hour, I had 2,000 contacts imported. And that was maybe one of the early tipping points, was that I realized that the product became like silly sticky once they got their contacts in. And
interesting.
And yeah. So,
did you have a rule for what you were going to do for these customers and what you just couldn't do and you were going to leave out for now at least?
Well, you know, my BS filter in general was that, like, you had to be a paying customer for me to build you something. And so the way it really boiled down, like, in that, if I had said it in those words to people, I don't think they would have responded very well. But what I found was, is that people generally understood that if they were asking for something that was not currently in the product, I would effectively say something to the effect of, well, look, I'm happy to build this for you. It sounds like it's a problem that other people in your industry have. But I just need a little bit of show of faith from you that once I build this, that you will use it. And so if you'll go ahead and give me your credit card number, I promise I won't charge it until you're happy. That would at least make me feel comfortable about the time I invest. And these were all salesmen, you know, so they understood it too. They're like, well, yeah, I wouldn't go to your house to sell you a house if you weren't like seriously in the industry either, or seriously in the market either. So that was my BS filter, is like, if you were willing to put your, you know, put your money where your mouth was, I would say yes. And knock on wood anyway, I haven't pissed anybody off yet.
What about size of requests? Were there any sizes or any big requests that you couldn't handle?
You know, I think there's really only one, and it's still been a request. It's coming in more and more right now. And you know, if any of you guys, customers are listening, it's going to take a little bit longer, but it's white label. It turns out that one of the niches that I kind of uncovered here is that there's a whole bunch of people out there that write direct mail newsletters and sell them to the people that want to send them out. So like, if you're a real estate agent and you don't want to write that stuff, there's like a whole industry of people out there that will write those for you, put your name on it, and then send you a PDF that you print and stuff. And so I'm starting to hear more and more from those guys that are saying, give me a white label product that I can kind of put under my own thing. And without sounding like a tool, that's really, it's really complex. And I've just been putting it at the back of the pipeline. It's going to have to be built. I don't want to build it right now, but it's coming soon. So,
okay. I'm going to take questions from the audience, but first one for me, one more for me. You do 2 calls a day. Did you do a cold call today? Do you still do cold
I did
calls?
Not today. Actually, I had a couple meetings early this morning.
Yesterday?
Yes, I did do 2 yesterday.
What'd you learn yesterday?
Yesterday, it turns out, I'm starting to try to get into the nonprofit space. So turns out they have a lot of mail to send, especially like every donation they send. So I've been trying to call more and more nonprofits. What I've learned is that gatekeepers are a bitch. So I'm trying to find a better way to like get to the decision makers. And so now I'm trying to use LinkedIn to try to filter out and figure out who actually sends those in a particular organization.
Are you just trying to learn from them, or are you trying to also close a sale when you do these cold calls, or is it both?
I think that's one and the same. You know, I think, just to be clear, I don't get on the phone directly saying, hey, I want you to be a customer, don't hang up. I start out by saying something to the effect of, you're smarter than me, I'm just a small-time entrepreneur. I was wondering if you have a problem like with mailing stuff, and if by using that tactic I try to get them to talk, and what I'm trying to get out of that is for them to identify the problem, which I hope is not too different than what we do, and then say something to the effect of, well, hey, so I got this thing called MailFinch. We send X amount of mail. Would you be willing to try it? And I just try to get them to say yes. And if they don't say yes, then before they hang up, I try to say something to the effect of, well, can I just send you a sample and just get some feedback on what you receive to just see what you think? And so those are the two goals that I'm driving for. The worst case scenario is they just hang up on me, or they just say, like, please don't call here again. And luckily that hasn't happened too much.
What percentage do you close? You do 10 calls a week. How many of those do you close?
Honestly, I'd say about, it's a little bit over like 60% will give me one of those two answers. They'll either let me send a sample or they will sign up.
Wow. All right, let's take the questions from the audience. I promised them. Let's see. Is Paul building all this stuff himself? AppRabbit wants to know. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And caveat is that just about 2 weeks ago, I brought on a part-time contractor as an engineering intern to help me. But yeah, I mean, code and the back-end automation for the printing now that I'm starting to work on, all that's in-house. That's me. When Andrew, I say we for any of this, it's me.
Andrew SG is asking, why not hire a few salespeople and have them work on commission?
Yeah, so actually that's a great question. That was actually what my meetings were about this morning, is that I'm trying to figure out how to break into that space without any cash outlays on my side. And before any of you call me cheap, I'm okay with that. But the reality is that I haven't proven, or I don't feel comfortable getting a bunch of sales guys across the country or in one big office just sitting there and dialing for dollars yet. So what I'm trying to figure out is there a way I can build a commission-only structure to start with and use that to prove out the model? I think we'll get there. I think within the next 6 months, I'm going to try to bring on a sales guy and just try the idea. But I'm not convinced that it'll work just yet.
All right. By the way, I will never call anybody cheap in a bad way. Cheap is good. let's see. Have you ever considered using direct mail to promote your business? Mike B wants to know.
You know, I've started to think about it, but I don't yet have a good way to filter out who should receive those letters just yet.
Okay.
Yeah. And each of those leads would cost me like 50 cents to send out, right? Because of the postage and all that. So just in the interest of like being cheap, I haven't done it yet.
I should tell you that my audience also respects cheap. AppRabbit respects cheap. He's saying, Dano, I respect frugal. Good. This is the right kind of audience that I'm getting for myself here. I don't want these people who are more into the trappings of success than they are into the work that goes into it. Again, from Andrew SG, why not create an affiliate program?
So actually, there is one. It's not advertised yet because somebody just started asking for it like 3 weeks ago, and so I'm testing it. But there is one now, and it'll go live. I'll probably put a page up in the next few days. But incidentally, I can talk a lot about what I learned about distribution, if you like. But affiliates channels are one of them right now.
What are you using to handle your affiliate programs?
It's all kind of in-house and manual right now. So I have this philosophy that I don't build anything until I generally feel comfortable that it will work. Mm-hmm. And so right now, basically, I have this like script. So the way that we do it, I've modeled it after I just ripped ideas from 37 Signals. Sorry, guys, but I just looked at their affiliate program. I saw how they were doing it. And if you guys don't know, in a nutshell, I think they pay you 20% of the first month's base fee, and then 5% for each month thereafter. And they pay you, this is the beauty of it all, man. They pay you 45 days after they collect money. That's awesome. So, you know, basically I collect the money and I don't have any outlays. So that's how I do it. And I have this script that runs in the background that just tells me in the morning, like, hey, it's been 45 days. You owe this person this much money. And then I just go pay via PayPal. So if you know of any vendors, I could use some help on the outside, but otherwise we'll build this in-house, you know, but affiliate program is going to be a big channel for us.
Right, I'm going to come back to the distribution and channels in a moment. I want to keep taking questions from the audience. Let's do some rapid fire questions. Todd W wants to know what programming language. He's probably a friend I met on Hacker News.
Ruby on Rails.
Ruby on Rails. Awesome. Let's see. Tanya wants to know who does the printing, stuffing, and mailing today?
You're looking at them.
So you're still printing and stuffing these envelopes by hand?
Yeah.
Paul, are you folding the paper and putting it in an envelope, or do you at least have a machine that folds it for you now?
I was for a long time. I found a few machines on eBay that kind of help, but it's still kind of a manual process. Basically, I jerry-rigged a series. So the beauty of this, to be really honest with you, I don't think the innovation of Mailfinch is in the website piece of this. To be really bluntly honest with you, any joker could do that. The real innovation for us is what we're doing on the back end. And basically what I've done is I've built something here that, you know, large printing houses have to spend $500,000 on to go to Pitney Bowes or whoever to build these huge mailing systems. For us, I've taken off-the-shelf printers. These are all like $300, $400 expendable machines. And built this custom thing that just spits out rapid fire pages, spits out an envelope next to it, and puts a collating page in between. And if on a bad day, what I learned was is that you know, mail sending is not like you wouldn't, you know, when I walked into this, I thought that like over a 30-day period, it would be an equal amount of mail for every day for 30 days. In practice, that's not true. You see this huge lump at the beginning of the month because people want the mail to hit the target and then they want to close a deal before the end of the month. So it's really lumpy, right? And so on a really bad day, I'll just, I've been calling like local temp agencies and I just get them in here and have them, you know, actually one of the printers is right next to me. The rest are in the basement, but they'll just, you know, they'll send in some temps and in 4 hours, they'll knock out like even the worst load. Because this isn't rocket science.
I just added a note here to my sheet of paper to ask you to flip, not yet, but to towards the end of the interview, to flip your camera around so we can see where your office is and what it looks like. Are you at home, by the way?
I'm at home, yeah.
Okay, we're going to see that in a little bit. Okay, the business only 6 months old, guys. I don't want to, in fact, I wasn't sure what this interview would be like, Paul, to be honest with you. I can never tell if an interview is going to be a hit, if the entrepreneur is going to be interesting and be able to teach what he does, or if it's just going to be somebody who sits there. I've had the big names here. I sit down and do an interview with them, and they just sit there like they had the worst day of their lives, and this is just adding to it, and what can we do to just give Andrew a quick answer and move on? And today, I had no clue what you were going to be like. It turns out you were one of my best guests here, and I could see it from the audience. Mike B., who's hard to please in the audience, apparently he's been pissing people off earlier, is saying, that's a success. I feel like this guy's one of us, says Casey Allen. Yeah, they're loving you, and I feel the exact same way. I could feel when an entrepreneur is really bringing it in. Okay, let's see.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad you're here, too. Why the name change? Why did you change MailFinch?
Yeah, so what had happened was that as I kept calling, so when I was doing these calls per day, right, the two calls per day, early on it was a little bit more than that, it was like five, but what I found was is that, you know, I was calling these people on the premise that I wasn't going to take more than 20 minutes of their time, and so the first like 10 minutes was spent explaining SnailPad, and I'm not lying, people would be like, wait, so you're telling me that you're going to send mail guaranteed next day and you have the word snail in your name? And I'm like, that's not the point. Just listen. And so before I changed the name, actually, you know, full disclosure, a friend of mine is the founder and CEO of Brandstack. And I had been talking to him, and on his website, I saw there was this logo for MailFinch. And the guy who has put this logo up, I think he was a designer in California somewhere, he was offering to sell the domain with this thing. And like it was going to be $400, and I was like, well, I don't really want to spend that money, but let me just see if it works. So I actually just called, you know, on my cold calls that day. I was like, yeah, hey, I'm Paul. I run this thing called MailFinch, and there was no site. There was nothing, right? And I was like, I run this site called MailFinch. We basically make it easy for you to send small bursts of direct mail without any hard work. And people got it. They're like, mail, check. Finch, oh, so it's like a carrier pigeon, but the little brother. I get it. And Wes will tell you from Brandstack, I think I was like in an airport that day, and like 2 seconds later, I went on the website and I bought it. And then it took me a couple days to kind of get around to switching everything over. But it was customers that drove, or I should say user calls or whatever, cold calls that drove that name change.
Wow, I really admire the way you're doing these lean tests. Let's see. Whoa, design. Somebody in the audience asked, I think it might have been Tanya, who does the design of your site?
So there's a guy named Robert McGuire. His link is actually on the bottom of my website, down at the bottom right. Really awesome guy. He's down in San Antonio. You know, there's not much bad I can say about the guy. I mean, he took the idea and ran with it. And to be just so that you know how that worked out, I basically said to him, hey, my site is really shitty looking. Can you make it look better? And I said, look, it's not rocket science. Just make it look better. I just need like one or two screenshots. Just give me your vision. He came back with this image that looked really awesome. In fact, there's not many differences from what he originally came back from with and what the site looks like today. I went to PSD to html.com and had them cut those images into CSS. And then I just, you know, applied them to the
site. This is a website you're talking about that will take an image and make it into a website.
That's right. Well,
what's the name of this company?
It's called PSD2HTML.com. And just to be clear, they don't make the website for you. They just give you the code back. And then I had to kind of skin it on top of my site.
I see. Okay.
So there was still a lot of work to be done, but it was pretty fast.
It's interesting. I didn't know that service existed. I just got an email from somebody today who said, Andrew, keep asking for these services. We want to know what's out there. We want to know what tools are out there that people are actually using.
Yeah.
The PDF story. How did you discover that you needed to do PDF?
Oh, well, that was pretty easy. Early on, I realized that people were sending the same thing over and over. I mean, I can't drive this point home far enough. It's like when I looked at the database early on about what people were sending, it was all the same. I mean, it was like word for word, it was all the same. Maybe the name was different at the top, but it was different. It was all the same. And so it was kind of like no brainer.
Where do you get your customers beyond cold calls? How are you getting customers?
Actually, I'm glad you asked, because I think that was something I did want to touch on was what I learned. So we service four main verticals right now. Three are kind of proven. The fourth one is getting really close to being proved in my mind. But real estate agents, insurance agents, attorneys, and now nonprofits. And what I learned early on, like with real estate agents, and this holds true for all those verticals, but with real estate agents, I originally thought that the agent was going to be the one that, you know, sends these newsletters. But what I learned was, remember when I talked about the newspapers and how I circled the ones with the big, you know, big budgets? It turns out when you have a big budget, you actually also have like an office admin that does all that BS work for you. And so I realized that my customer was not the agent, because the agent already knew that they had to send mail. My customer was the office admin. It was like the, you know, this mid-20-something-year-old office manager who just hated the fact that they had to sit there and like do this work. And what I realized was is that office managers have a lot of friends that are office managers. And so what I found was early on that if I could get even one foot into the door with, you know, with a small agency, like a small real estate office, I could get everybody else in that office network, because all the office managers were friends. And then down the road, I realized that they were all greedy bastards, maybe like me. And so that's where I started kind of the affiliate program idea came up, is because like one of those people was like, hey, I've referred so many people to you. Can you pay me? And I was like, well, I don't know how, but that's fair.
Love this. Dano in the audience says, McGuireDesign.com, if anyone wants to see who did your work.
Yes.
Andy Dang in the audience, he's a member of the Mixergy community, so I'll give out his website. He says he can do design work too if anyone needs it, andydang.com. Let's see what else is out there. All right, they're just talking to each other here. My next question is competition. Mailfish isn't the first business to do this. I've seen other sites do this.
Yeah, so you know, I heard that from a lot of like my tech friends or entrepreneur friends, was like, Paul, this isn't rocket science. And you know, I didn't know what to think. So I did two things early on. One thing I did was I looked at some of the competitors, and I have no problem mentioning them. There are guys like Postal Methods, Postful. There's a couple others that actually have fizzled out now, but those are probably the two big ones, at least have a large web presence anyway. So that was one group of companies I looked at, and I'll talk about those in a minute. And then the other group of companies was like, I looked at the big mail houses. So again, I live in the Washington, D.C. area. It turns out that there are a lot of bulk mail facilities nearby. And so I actually like called 10 of them, and like three of them never called back. But the rest of them did talk to me. And it turns out they're all family-owned businesses. And so I ended up talking to people. And fundamentally what I learned was is that if I wanted to tackle the whole market, I'd probably get hurt. Those guys could annihilate me. So early on, I wasn't really worried about like Postal Methods or Postal or any of those guys. I was worried about the big guy. I was like, why would an agent come to me instead of going to a big mail house? And the funny thing is when I talked to those like six or seven bulk mail facility owners, they told me themselves, they were like, Paul, look, we invest a ton of money, like upwards of $250,000 in these specialized mailing systems. We cannot touch anybody that wants to send like less than like 5,000 or 10,000 pieces of mail. It's just the economics of the game. They have so much money invested, they couldn't do it. And so I kind of like scratched my head and I was like, okay, so I don't really want to touch the guys with like a million pieces of mail every month, because I don't know how to mail that, you know, and I have to sit here and fold all that. That's going to suck. I get a lot of flyers in my neighborhood. I wonder how they do that. And so I kind of like narrowed it down. So then when I looked at some of those two online players that I looked at, I noticed two things about them. One was they don't talk. Like, they don't, you can't talk to the founder. You can't talk to anybody on either of those sites easily. That's one thing. The second thing is that, like, at least with one of those competitors, and I won't name this one, but you can figure it out when you go to their site. If you want to get the best pricing, you have to pay a ton of money up front, like $10,000 worth of money up front. And then you have to eat out of that money, like as you send credits. And we don't do that. Like, we just, I wasn't worried about them because, like, if somebody had 10,000 bucks to give up front and then burn through that over the next 60 days, maybe they're not my customers right now. I needed people that directly, you know, directly attributed this month's revenue to this month's mailing. And these people were okay with paying a little bit up front to get that mail on the target by like the third business day. And that was, you know, that was kind of like why I went after the target that I did. And frankly, I think that's why it's worked so well.
Casey Allen in the audience asked if you were intentionally following the lean startup ideas. Did you hear about that process, the whole methodology, and say, I'm going to build my business that way? Or did it just happen that this is the way you've been building it?
Well, you know, I'd be lying if I said that a lot of the stuff that they, that you learn in the lean startup movement or whatever didn't affect me. In hindsight, I would say that what really drove me to build the business this way was the fact that, you know, my principle was that I would not spend my own money, that this business had to pay for itself. And, you know, right now, like, our profit margins are terrible because there's people involved in every step of the process. But that's okay because we're still, you know, eking out a little bit of profit. I don't pay myself, but that's okay. It will get better. The profit margins will get better. I think I'm getting to the point now where I'm starting to think about the larger scale investments. But again, the major innovation for us is going to be in the back end. And the good news is that the economy sucks for everybody. So, like, I've been calling Xerox, HP, and Canon directly and saying, look, nobody is buying stuff from you guys. I want to build a custom solution. I want the patent to it. And I'm willing to pay good money for it. Let's talk. And all three actually sent me demo units. And we're really close to one of the units actually is still here. I can't show it to you yet, but that's going to be our, I think, knock on wood anyway, our secret weapon. And
they're building something custom for you.
With off-the-shelf components.
So they're taking components that they already have. They're just piecing them together. They're saying, this is just for MailFinch because he asked for it, because we have a bad economy and somebody's finally asking to buy something and we have nothing else to do anyway. Let's do it for him.
Well, yeah, and just to be clear, I mean, the main driver for that, for them, the main incentive for them is that I didn't promise to just buy one. I promised to buy a lot. And the reason is that I've got a large customer who I can't name, but their logo is on my website. They send a lot of mail, and they are helping finance this indirectly because they want all mail, just because we already do just in time. Everything goes in the mail the next day. But all mail goes out of the DC area. So that means if your targets are in San Francisco, we won't get there until four business days. Well, it turns out with a lot of these high touch marketers, they want it there the next day and they want to be able to call these people within 24 hours of that. So one of the things we're doing is once we get these units, I'm gonna try to place them in different areas based on our volume. And that's going to be a little tricky, but that's the direction.
Talk to me about how you're getting a customer to fund your business. That's another thing that I'm seeing in scrappy startups, that they're not raising money. They're getting it from their customers. Yeah. How'd you do it?
So, you know, in hindsight, if I had gone to, for example, this large company and said, guys, this is my idea, pay me and I'll build it. I don't think it would have worked because, like, just, you know, they don't know me. There was no warm intro. Like, How could they trust me? So instead, actually, it started out with one person at their company started using us to send newsletters to their prospects. Turned out that they were already doing this because each agent at this firm had to send all these new – it was a sales tactic. They sent these newsletters, and within 24 hours, they had to call them. Well, it turns out that one agent works in an office with 12 other agents. Well, as soon as this one agent's making more money – the other 11 or whatever in that office are like, oh shit, I need to do this too, right? Because this person was, you know, directly, they were willing to pay me. This one girl that was the first customer at that company, she was willing to pay me because by paying me, she could spend more time on the phone. And that to her translated into money. And anyway, so it went up the chain from there. And what I started hearing, I didn't make this up. These people came to me and said, well, look, Paul, you've got this one office using it now. That's great for this one office and all the offices that are like within 50 miles of it, but it sucks for our offices that are like 600 miles away. How do we get that office to be able to get mail to their prospects, which are all within 50 miles, within one business day? And I said, well, we could put another facility there. By facility, that sounds like fancy, but that's actually like a printer. It's like a printer in one room or something with like me just getting an intern or something to go down there. It's not rocket science. And I said, well, I could do this, but you know, I need a commitment from you that if we invest this capital in this hardware, you know, I'm not expecting you to pay for it all outright, but I do want a commitment that you will stay a customer for X amount of months. I'm not going to ask you for all that money up front. I just want a firm commitment. And, you know, my dirty little secret is I didn't have a lawyer review it, so I didn't pay anything, but I've just got like a little one-page document that says, I promise to pay so-and-so this much money over the course of this much time, and maybe it'll come back and bite me in the ass, but they've paid their bills so far.
I like this a lot. I like what we're hearing here. Okay, let's now talk about revenue and profits. 6 months in business, what was the revenue last month?
Revenue was probably just under $22,000.
$22,000 in revenue last month. What was the revenue the month before that?
Revenue then was a little bit over $7,500.
$7,500, and you suddenly went to $22,000.
Well, the volume jumped as well. So yeah. Actually, as the volume jumps with individual clients, the per piece margins go down considerably. So.
How about the month before that?
Month before that was probably, I want to say just about $2,000.
Wow, so this is phenomenal growth. 2,000 to 7.5 thousand to 22,000.
Yeah.
Okay, and last month was month number five?
Last month was month number six.
Number six, okay.
The site actually went live November 13th, so I might be doing the math wrong, but November 13th or 14th, but I think it's month five.
Okay, give or take, month five was 7.5 thousand. Month four was 2,000. Do you remember what month three was?
Oh, it was like in the high hundreds of dollars.
Wow, this is great
growth. In hindsight, I wish I knew some of the stuff I knew today because, like, in hindsight, I left a lot of money on the table.
What do you mean?
Well, I originally started by thinking, okay, everybody will pay me $3 a letter. And what I realized was is that that works really well for, like, you know, the guy that's going to send like 100 pieces or something, or like 50 pieces. I tried to stick to my guns when I started to see agents that wanted to send to like 600 people a month. Well, $1,800 is a hard sell because they have to think about it. And anyway, like over the last like 60 or 90 days is really when I realized that when they send more and they commit to sending more, I should give them a smaller price or smaller per piece price. And I kind of wish I did that a little earlier. And that's kind of why that revenue ramp is so steep now, is just that by decreasing the per piece cost, customers were more willing to actually take a chance and jump on board. And if you look at our pricing page today, the way it works, the way I modeled it, for better or for worse, was kind of like your cell phone contract, in the sense that, like, you know, I've got an iPhone probably just like you and your audience, right? And there's a certain amount of minutes that are associated with that, a certain amount of text message and data, and you pay whatever it is that you pay for it. And so you've committed to that much money, and they've got your credit card on file probably. And so over that 30 days, if you stay within those limits, great. Fine, you don't have to pay anything else. But if you go over and above, then you, on your next renewal, you pay the next month's monthly fee and you pay for any overage in the last month. And that turned out to be an easy sell to these people that I wish I had learned earlier, because in the vast majority of these cases, they've already got revenue in, you know, they've already attributed new revenue to this channel, to this direct mail channel, before that overage fee comes in.
I don't understand that. So they figure they're only thinking of that base price. They don't realize that they're going to go over at times, and going over is good for you.
Yeah. To be really blunt with you, like, if you sign up, for example, for my smallest, let's just say my middle of the road plan, which is actually where a lot of people start out, it's like $99 a month, you get 100 stamps with it or whatever. If you send exactly 100 letters inside the US, my margin is like the smallest, right? I mean, it's like a, you know, it's like a, that's the curve is like that. And the dip, the smallest part is where you send exactly as many as in your package. Where I make a lot of money is where you don't use all the stamps, or where you really go over, or even if you go over by one, the margins increase. Now, if you don't send as many, I'm really careful about that. And I'll actually like maybe email you or call you and say, hey, what happened? Maybe we can find a way. Cause I don't want you to ever feel like you left anything on the table. To be perfectly blunt, I want to get you signed up and grease the wheels so much that you'll blow past that limit. And frankly, that's where the huge margins are for me right now. Well, when you look at an individual customer basis, the huge margins are when I grease the wheels and they blow past the 500 limit on whatever plan they're on. So
they're loving you in the audience. Guys, thanks for giving me this feedback as I'm doing this interview. And if you're not listening live, first of all, you should be. 11 a.m. Pacific every day, just about. Come watch us every weekday. And if you're not listening live, come back to the site and give us your feedback. Let's see what else I've got here. Margins. What are the net margins?
Net margins right now are pretty terrible. They're like 15%. Okay. I take that with a grain of salt. It's like plus or minus 3%, I'd say. The reality is that it's a lot of manual labor, a lot of tech support or admin support. We're using shitty hardware, so it fails all the time. I suspect that my target margins are, I would like to shoot for over 50%. But we're going to have to invest in a lot of hardware to do that. And that'll probably take, you know, conservatively, I think it'll take at least another year if I don't invest any of my own money to do that.
We talked earlier about distribution and channels. I said I'd come back to that. One channel that we discussed was affiliate programs. What else is there?
That's actually the main one. Affiliate programs is really what I would boil it up into is that how do you get your existing users to talk about it? And when people talk about that online today, I feel like a lot of advice that you get is like super hand wavy, kind of like what I'm doing a lot in this call, unfortunately. But, you know, if you're solving a real problem for somebody, they will tell their friends. And it's not important that they tell their friends as much as it is important that they tell their relevant friends. And so, like, you know, when I solve a problem for an office manager in a certain vertical, the reason I do that is because I expect, my assumption is that she probably networks with other office managers. It's unlikely that she's hanging out with like the CEO of all your local gas station chains or something like that. She's probably hanging out with, you know, somebody else at another office that does something similar to her. And so the hand wavy word for that is word of mouth, but frankly, like, I just think that of that as like the affiliate channel. Like, how do you get an individual user to tell their friends in that same market? And money seems to be a very good motivator to get these people to do what I want them to do.
Okay, but you haven't tried Google Ads yet. You haven't bought ads in those newspapers that you're picking up. You haven't done any of it.
Yeah, so I have not tried newsletters or newspaper ads. I did try AdWords. Truthfully, I suck at that stuff. And I didn't get the ROI out of it. I got not a single customer out of it, and I spent like $600. And I was like, okay, I'm either doing this wrong or the decision makers in the industries that I want don't click on these ads. And if I had to bet you money right now, I think it's less about me being terrible at running AdWords campaigns and more about my target industry or my target users not being the ones that click on those ads.
I'll say this. We have people in the audience who are great at AdWords. If anybody wants to help Paul, what's a good way for them to contact you?
So my email address is just paul@mailfinch.com. And okay. I'd be happy to, you know, talk to them about that. Or if they have any ideas or thoughts about their own stuff, I'm happy to. I love helping people. So.
Cool. I know that about you actually from the research that I did before this interview. I want somebody in the audience, if they can, to be able to help you back too. I've got just a little bit more time here, so let's rip through some other tools that you use, since I keep getting requests for that. What tools do you use that have done well for you?
You mean for like talking to customers, or
yeah, for talking to customers, for what else? For keeping track of your orders, for collecting payment, anything that you can't live without. Anything like what was that site that you told us?
Okay,
Olark.
Yeah. So for live chat, it's well, I should say live chat. Yeah, live chat is Olark. The feedback button on the right is user voice. The printing systems actually are, you know, it's Ruby on Rails, and then the way I keep, this is going to sound really ghetto because it is, but like the way that I validate that all the orders went out properly is that actually every order generates an email that comes to me and my wife, and every afternoon we just like spot check everything and make sure that like the right stuff went into the right envelopes for tomorrow's mailing. And it's not super complicated. Like the tool there is like mail.app on my MacBook. And you know, other than that, it's just, there's really no specialized tools. There's a lot of printers, a lot of USB cables.
We're going to see those in a moment.
I use Rackspace Cloud for the actual hosting. I started out on Heroku because you could get a Ruby on Rails site out lot, you know, really fast. But it just, to be really honest with you, I needed something called Delayed Job, which is like this background working system to keep the site going fast. And I realized I had to pay for it. And I was like, well, if I'm going to pay for this thing on Heroku, I might as well just like go get a shitty box at Rackspace Cloud, because at least I know it's like vendor neutral. And so I moved everything there. And sorry, Heroku guys, but that's what I did. So
Was there two others? Let's talk about one other. Actually, yeah, two other businesses. What was Filtro real quick? That was a business that you launched that within 11 months you sold. What was the business?
Yeah, so Filtro was basically a real-time relevancy engine, which sounds hand-wavy, and it kind of is. But basically what we did was we filtered out, we scraped all the major social media sites, and we figured out what people were paying attention to. And what we, it started out as a consumer site, but I had to pivot really fast because I realized that consumers are fickle and they don't pay for shit. And I realized that like if you could take all that data and figure out what people might be interested in buying, I'll tell you just on the record that businesses will pay a shitload of money for that because it's targeted leads. And so that was what Filtro was. And I forget the second part of that question. I'm sorry.
Actually, I was going to ask you about the next thing that you were involved with, but let's spend a little bit more time here.
Sure.
What were you selling to businesses that you were collecting from social networks?
You know, so actually, just to be honest, no money ever traded hands. Like the first people that I started talking to, it just kind of like went downhill from there. I mean, it was kind of like, hey, we're thinking about investing in you. And then like 2 weeks later, it was kind of like, hey, we were actually thinking about whether you'd like to join our team. And I was like, what does that mean? And and it, you know, truthfully, maybe I got out a little bit too fast, but it was a fantastic team and a fantastic group of guys that we're going to use the technology for something actually different than what it started out with.
I see. So you had this idea of scraping social networks. You were going to make it available to, no?
No, actually, it also started out as an accident. It started out, it's, and again, remember that it's super easy for me to say this in hindsight, but the reality of this was that when I first started, it was actually like a few days worth of code. I wanted to learn Ruby on Rails, and at the time, I was kind of flying to San Francisco a lot. And I, you know, it's funny to even say this, but at that time, only like 15 months ago, they didn't have Wi-Fi on planes, or at least on Virgin America. So what I used to have to do was like, I would have to fire up NetNewsWire while I was at the airport at Dulles and get all my stuff synchronized. And then I'd get on this Virgin America plane and I'd sit on there for 5 hours to go to San Francisco. And what I found was like, I'm like, I would take off and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna read all 10,000 of these things. And then I'd like order one drink and then start watching like, you know, Family Guy, and I'd be like, mark all is red. And so it just started out where like I started thinking, well, hey, maybe I could just build something that would filter this for me. And I showed it to somebody in San Francisco who happened to turned out to be one of the first investors in it. And he just said, hey, can I get a login? And I was like, well, I don't actually have a login system, but give me a couple of days, I'll get that for you. And one of my friends called me up, like a good friend of mine. We did a startup together a long time ago, but he was like, hey, you got to go to this thing called South by Southwest. And I'm like, why would I want to go to that? I hate conventions. And he's like, just shut up and come. And so he talked to my wife. I'm not making this up. I was in DC having dinner with some people. So this guy Vid calls me. He's like, "Dude, you got to come to Texas." I'm like, "Oh, let me talk to my wife. I don't know. I don't really like conventions." He was like, "Well, I already talked to your wife. She's already booked the flight, so I'll pick you up at this point." And I'm like, "Oh shit, all right." And so I had no tickets. I didn't buy any tickets to South By. In fact, this year I didn't buy tickets to South By, but I went anyway because all I did was I walked around the hallways at South By Southwest and walked around my laptop and I was like, "Hey, can I show you something? Hey, can I show you something?" And there was a targeted list of people. This sounds so stalkerish because it is, but there were some specific people that I wanted to show Filtro to in its early form, and it really was shitty. But I basically found them on Twitter. I figured out where they were going to be, what you know, panels they were going to go to. And last year at South By, I don't know if you were there or if some of your audience was, but the convention was actually, or the panels were on the same, like you could walk around on that same level. You just couldn't go into the panels without a badge. And so that was okay because if you were the person I wanted to talk to and show you the product, and I knew that you were going to a certain panel, which you, as a general South by Southwest attendee, were going to pimp out to all your friends and say, "I'm going to this panel," I'd find out, and then I'd get to that room like 15 minutes early and start walking away. And I'd be like, "Oh, there's Andrew. Hey, Andrew. Hey, funny seeing you here. Hey, let me show you this thing. I just want some feedback." And I got a few people really interested in it, and they helped me build a beta list and help me kind of like, you know, figure it out from there. So it was more out of necessity and accident and being naive and just talking to people that kind of got me.
What kind of exit did you get for Filtro?
Sorry?
What kind of exit did you get?
So I can't talk about the numbers or anything like that, but basically it was a cash settlement with a little bit of equity in the new company that was formed around it.
Okay, and the company is City Voice. People can go to cityvoice.com and see it.
Yeah,
if you actually, got any, it's like, integrated, so they can't see it as a standalone product.
Oh yeah. What Filtro was is not there anymore. I mean, it's totally different now. City Voice is a totally different industry. But you know, if you got any plumbers or HVAC guys in your audience, City Voice is looking for you.
Results Junkie. That's the other thing that I was going to ask you about. It's a management consulting company that you started. What were you doing with that?
Yeah, so I hate the term management consulting, but unfortunately, that's like whenever I talk about it, that's the only thing people really get. Basically, I advise a lot of companies, both startups and not so startups, about all the what I call the unsexy parts of their business. And what that really means is that I fundamentally believe, and this is true with Mailfinch too, that 85% of every business is the same. Meaning, like at your core, you're going to invoice, you're going to provision customers, bill them, receive money, you know, all the stuff that nobody really wants to think about. And I argue that 85% of every business is the same. And so Results Junkies is kind of my umbrella firm for that consulting, where I just kind of go in and I don't do like hand wavy strategies to tell you how to do it. I mean, I guess if you really wanted to pay me to do it, I could, but I'm better at just saying, here's how we're going to fix this problem. And I'll get in there, roll up my sleeves and fix it for you. And so actually that's kind of how I've been okay with not paying myself with Mailfinch, is that I just do these consulting things on the side, and you know, I don't drive a Ferrari or anything like that, and nor do I need to. But you know, it keeps things interesting for me because I get to see more and more companies, and the unintended benefit is it turns out that I've learned a lot about what back-end processes people have to redo, and I keep thinking about like what I could do, what I could build that could help, you know, productize that. And again, Mailfinch is maybe just one avenue of doing that, but it definitely didn't start out that way.
You know what? I wish we had a whole other hour just to do an interview on that. I'd love to see what you learned, and I'd love to see how you systemized it in your head and for the clients that you have. All right, guys, people are loving this interview. I agree with you. Omar, Guerrilla Marketing, he loved the way you approach people at South by Southwest. Me too. That was one of the best pieces of this interview. Okay, final thing, final note on my piece of paper here is to see the office. Can you swing your camera around?
Yeah. All right, guys, I'm a little messy, but...
Good,
so
me too.
That's the first printer, actually, for Mailfinch.
$300.
Free, actually. I got this from my sister-in-law or my mother-in-law, I think. She got it free with her laptop purchase last year.
So, all right.
That's it, man. And I'm not throwing it away, and I wouldn't sell it for anything. Just my desk.
Yep.
And some books across the way, and that's about it. And the rest of it's just kind of a mess, man. I, you know,
So you're still just printing out on that one printer there?
Oh, no, no, no. There's more printers now in the basement. Okay. They look just like that. They're all just basic inkjet printers that you can buy from Staples and Office Depot, and that's where I get everything from. Well, that's what's contributing to my shitty profit margins too. So,
because you have to just keep buying this stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, each ink cartridge, like I've got one here that we replaced. Each ink cartridge costs like $40, and you know, it'll probably last anywhere between 500 sheets and 1,000 sheets, and it sucks. But you know, the alternative was to pay like $6,000 at least for like a crazy awesome printer that could do what I wanted to do, and I haven't bought it yet, and I figure if I can make the margins work on crappy hardware, that it'll hopefully only get better when I invest in good hardware.
But you got $22,000 a month coming in now. That's about $250,000 a year run rate. That's not bad.
It's not bad.
6 month company, and I love how you keep focusing on profits and how you just keep asking your audience, your customers for feedback, and how you build based on what they'll pay for, not just what they'll ask for. Man, there's so much good stuff in this interview.
If I could just say one thing to your audience, though, I think that, you know, I don't remember where I saw this or anything else, but a long time ago, I think I read something that I'm going to take credit for now because I don't know who originally wrote it, because it's driven my thoughts. And it basically is all truth is in the cash account, right? Meaning just that, you know, if something's not going to – if I can't attribute something that I'm working on or something that somebody that I'm talking to in terms of a client call anyway, to direct revenue for Mailfinch, then I probably shouldn't be doing it. And, you know, maybe that's only true for like industries like ours where it's online or something like that, but I would just encourage your audience to think about that and what it might mean for whatever projects they're working on. Because the reality is that getting venture money is harder now, and it's probably not right for like the majority of the guys that are on this call or out there. And, if you can get customers to pay, and they will, if you can solve a business problem for them, I would encourage you to do that because it's awesome. I mean, they will love you. I mean, I've got customers that call me and say like, you are awesome because like they don't have to lick somebody. One of my early customers said, I called him up and I was like, hey dude, how you feeling about this thing? He just sent his first blast of newsletters out. And he's like, dude, for the first time I can taste my breakfast because he wasn't licking envelopes anymore. And I'm like, sweet, send more next month.
Oh, great. I love doing this interview. As much as you guys love listening to it and watching it, I love doing this kind of interview. It's a little bit harder for me because I have to do so much work before to make sure that what you're saying to me is legit. Because young companies, you're not sending your finances to Inc. magazine and not having anybody audit them. There's not a popular reporter, trustworthy reporter whose article's on you I can trust. So what I often will do with these bootstrap companies, and you and I, we were introduced through a mutual friend and I was able to look you up a little bit, but in many other cases what I do is I ask to see the numbers. Like I will ask to see the register, I will ask to see the PayPal account, I will ask for screen share so we can justify and make sure that everything that I'm putting out there is real. So what I'm saying is these interviews are harder, they're harder to find, they're harder to do, they're harder to research, but they're absolutely worth it, as you guys can see in this interview with Paul Singh. All right, and keep telling me if you know anyone like Paul Singh. If you know anyone with this kind of story, tell you what, there's not going to be anyone like Paul Singh, but if there's anyone with this kind of story out there, bootstrappy, startup, scrappy guy with real results, I'd love to meet him. For now, Paul Singh, they love you here. They're already demanding that I have you back in 3 months. Andy Dang wants you back in 3 months. Dan O'Manion wants you in sure. 3 months. We're going to have to do another interview at some point and find out Absolutely. What you learn. So Absolutely. Let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. Andrew, thank you for the time. Thanks for having me. And I really appreciate this and had a great time.
All right. Thank you for doing this interview, guys. Thank you for watching. Come back to Mixergy. Give me your feedback. I'll see you there.